Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Short work week, but it's not short of lots of global news over the past few days. I guess at the start of the week, it was all about that 200,000-ton container ship blocking $9 billion in global trade per day. That's finally been freed. It's off now. So how does this affect the supply chain? What kind of lessons have been learned from the blockage of the Suez Canal?
I think it means we take a lot of these ship crews for granted. Mm. Plus, proving the old saying, what goes up must come down, we've been keeping a close eye on Bill Huang's Archegos capital management meltdown. We've also learned how to say that in the past week.
Oh, yes, indeed we have. U.S. President Joe Biden has unveiled his $2.25 trillion infrastructure plan. He's called the once in a generation investment in America. How will businesses react to the news? Who are the ones paying the increased corporate tax? Let's find out more from Jeffrey Holly, who is the senior market analyst Asia Pacific at Oenda. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Happy Thursday.
Indeed. We're so happy that it's a nice long weekend. We've got lots to digest, don't we?
We do indeed. This week has certainly been a busy one and it's set to continue.
Yeah, I suppose let's start off with the one that's freshest on our minds, which is this morning, that $2.25 trillion infrastructure plan. What are your initial thoughts on this proposal?
My initial thoughts were that it was reasonably revenue neutral until I looked in the small print, which is always an important to do with politicians. So, yeah, we've got $2.25 trillion. Now, bear in mind, this is not the full package. He does want to do something else again in, relating to childcare and other bits and pieces, which is more social spending at a later stage. But the $2.2 trillion to be spent is roughly balanced by an increase of taxes by $2 trillion. But whereas he wants to spend over 10 years, he's going to raise taxes over 15 years. So, sure, there's definitely going to be probably another trillion or so of government debt to be issued somewhere along the way. I think the challenge here is actually getting it through the Houses of Congress, because even some moderate Democrats are blanching at some of these targets and where the spending is being directed. So I expect the president will be a very busy man over the coming weeks. And I'm actually quite amazed that Wall Street finished pretty much higher, even though they're looking at putting, you know, another $2 trillion of taxes on them. It's a strange old world. So, but I think, I mean, as far as positioning America for the future, you know, $600 billion in transport and infrastructure, $560 billion for green housing, schools and things, and another $500 billion in manufacturing subsidies. And I think there was $200 billion in there for broadband as well. I think that's positive for the long-term prospects of the U.S. on the face value. As I said, though, the challenge will be actually getting it signed off and the money in the bank.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's clear it needs to be done. It's just, can you get everybody to agree about how it's going to be done? Now, look, Jeffrey, you were just talking about how the market seemed to be pushing up. Lots of remarkable things have been happening, I feel, in the past month, including this story about the ship that got stuck in the Suez Canal. I mean, these are one of these stories, you sort of wake up to it and think, I cannot believe this is happening. You know, one thing it has done for all of us is it's reminded us how we take supply chains for granted, because suddenly there was this big backlog. What does this tell us about the impact for supply chains in the future?
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what the lessons learned here are. The way that the world works is this system called just-in-time. It was pioneered by the Japanese. So everything arrives just in time for the production schedules, basically, and that minimizes waste and cost, et cetera, et cetera. It all works wonderfully well as long as everything does actually arrive just in time. And we can see with the chip shortage around the world, the problems that we're having with car plants and other parts of the global production ecosystem having to shut down because nobody can get enough of these semiconductors. So there are these stresses here where demand has rebounded very sharply. But I think it does show some of the real bottlenecks in the global system and its vulnerability to disruptions. 10%, I think, of world commerce goes through the Suez Canal. That's one hiccup over 2 weeks, and we've seen the consequences of that downstream already. So whether there's a movement here now for companies to move further away from just in time and actually work back to the old keeping inventories and stock sort of process. Time will tell on that one. I suspect that once the dust settles on the Suez Canal, things will go back to the way they were, to be honest, although I don't necessarily think that is a way to build resilience in the system.
That was kind of the motto this morning when I came in to work, just in time.
You woke up just in time. Just in time. Yeah. But one thing you won't be doing is lunch. That won't be just in time. Yeah. That will be on time.
Oh,
yeah.
For sure, Jeff, for sure. Yeah. Here's another saga that, well, at least the ship's been solved. It's out of the jam. But this saga is ongoing, and we're still getting details about it, the Archegos Capital saga. Jeff, where should we prioritize, you know, which area should be looked at first? I mean, do we look at risk management? Do we worry about the potential solvency of banks because of the ecosystem? Or do we put regulation on family investment offices? Where do I put my priorities?
Yeah, I think that the challenge here is we don't have all the information yet. So we need to understand with Archegos had been less than open about the true size of their positions with other counterparties. That's one side of things. Then there's this age-old question about how much banks, particularly, and that's always banks, lend to these entities in order to get their business, which is obviously very lucrative. It always comes back to leverage, though. With long-term capital management, the global financial crisis, Archegos now, it always comes back to excessive leverage. And you could even throw in some of the commodity space hiccups that we've seen in Singapore over the last couple of years, where, again, commodity shipments were borrowed on multiple times without telling the other banks, et cetera, et cetera. Regulatory authorities in the US have already signaled that they're going to look at this much more closely. The challenge for banks is that, yes, you could have a central repository for all the information, but then that raises client confidentiality problems. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're all competing against each other as well. So I think it's a combination of all of the above. But I do believe that more regulation in the current environment in Washington, D.C. is definitely on the way with regards to prime brokerage and the amount of leverage that some of these investment funds are being given.
Yeah, incredible story. I mean, just how Bill Huang's vast wealth was even hidden from Wall Street in the first place. I think there are going to be documentaries on this. Look, just finally, I want to bring it a bit closer to home. Let's talk about Chinese fintech firm Byrong. So it debuted in Hong Kong yesterday, but a bit of a slump. Video streaming service Bilibili also slipping during its debut. That was on Monday. What's going on here? Is there some sort of reflection of the increased scrutiny on some of these tech firms by Beijing?
Yeah, but I believe that we're seeing some challenges globally as well. Deliveroo, for example, turned into Deliveroo yesterday. It fell 25% on its London IPO debut as well. Thing is, IPOs are an art form. They're not necessarily a science, and it's all about timing. And if you get a market that's really effervescent and very bullish and more risk friendly, then you usually get a good IPO away. If the mood has changed, then often these IPOs will struggle in their first day. So I believe, though, in the case of China, this overriding sort of inquiry and being restrictions, these anti-monopoly restrictions, et cetera, that are going on with Alibaba and now Tencent and some other companies, I think that has sapped the confidence out of the tech sector for now. And so, I mean, it all comes down to timing. If they'd done their IPOs 3 months ago, they'd have had a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. At this moment, the atmosphere is not quite right for it. In a month's time, it could be better again. But as I said, it's important to realize IPOs are an art form and not a science, and timing is everything with them.
All right. We've been speaking with Jeffrey Hawley, who's the Senior Market Analyst for Asia Pacific at OANDA. Jeff, thanks so much for your time this morning. Take care. Enjoy the long weekend, yeah?
Yes, and to you. And make sure you don't have lunch just in time.
Gotcha, mate.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.